Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. You can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Oliver Tapp about his book, Invisible, Out-of-Body Experiences and Explorations into the Afterlife, The Munro Method. Oliver has been an outreach trainer for the Munro Institute since 2010. He is a certified yoga teacher and has been educated in trance mediumship at the Arthur Findlay College. Oliver is an intuitive artist. In 2018, he became a certified neurographica specialist using art as a medium for communication. Hi, Oliver. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Simon. Thank you so much for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book, Invisible, Out-of-Body Experiences and Explorations into the Afterlife, The Munro Method. Could you tell us, first of all, what is the Munro Method?
Well, Robert Munro was the pioneer of out-of-body experiences in modern times. You know, he had a spontaneous out-of-body experience in the late 1950s, 1958, I think it was. And as a radio producer, he was really not only surprised, but in shock about what had happened to him. And consequently, he dedicated his life to the research of this phenomenon. And he left behind a great legacy, which we can call the Munro Method, really.
When you're having an out-of-body experience, is it that you are actually outside your body and you have a normal waking state like you do now? Or is it more like you're still aware you're in your body, but you're visualizing everything that's happening?
No, I'm indeed outside of my body, and I firmly believe that we're never truly inside of our bodies. You have to understand that the body is only a vehicle that is used by the greater consciousness in order to facilitate certain experiences. In our case, now as we talk, an incarnation on planet Earth. But consciousness is not confined by a body. So I like to tell people when I start my workshops to ask themselves one question. Is consciousness inside your body? Does it reside inside your body? Or is the body residing in consciousness? To me, it's very obvious and clear after all these experiences that I've had, and there are countless hundreds, if not over 1,000, that the body is just a vehicle, a temporary vehicle, and consciousness uses its mechanics, so to speak, in order to make certain experiences on planet Earth.
So how did this all start for you? What led you to investigate this?
Oh, I never thought in a million years that I would turn into an out-of-body expert at some point. I was in my mid-20s when I immigrated to the United States. And when I was born and raised in Germany, as you can probably tell by my accent, but I immigrated to the States in 1991. And just before I left on my flight, I purchased a book in a small bookstore near Frankfurt, Germany. And I didn't have much time, so I didn't pay attention really. It was just a book, you know, and the author was Robert Alan Munro. And it was about out-of-body experiences. I read about halfway through the book during my flight, and I thought, this is all science fiction. You know, this can't possibly be true. And the terminology he used was somewhat difficult to understand and to grasp for me. So I put the book aside. And about 9 years later, I was working as a TV producer in Los Angeles. I received a call from a German TV network asking me to investigate the Munro Institute to see if we could, you know, film a story about what was going on behind their walls. Someone at the production offices in Germany had also gotten hold of one of Robert Munro's books and was really curious. So I called up the Institute, and I remembered reading half of Bob's book 9 years earlier. But Monroe had passed away at that point. It was the year 2000, and his daughter, Laurie Monroe, was the president of the Institute at that point. And Laurie wasn't particularly interested in having media at the Institute, just because she's had some negative experiences and didn't want to, you know, run into chances that more negative reporting could, you know, lead to challenges for the Monroe Institute. Because in the, you know, even in the year 2000, hardly anybody was taking this kind of research serious. But, and the internet, of course, wasn't all functional as we know it today. It was analog, you know, AOL, you've got mail. Everything took about an hour to load. And there wasn't much, you know, much, you didn't have a chance to really get into deep research about the phenomenon. Even though we know today that there's different philosophies that talk about out-of-body experiences. But Monroe had to do it all by himself. And Laurie explained to me that if I would bring a camera team to the Institute, it wouldn't do anybody good because, you know, what they do there and what they experience is cannot be shot by a camera because it's, you know, outside of your physical realm. And So I had to tell the network that we weren't going to be able to produce a story about the Institute, but I was so intrigued that I pulled out this old book again and read through it this time all the way. And then I decided to register for one of the programs, which was the Gateway Experience, which is the main in-house program. They still feature after all these years at the Institute several times a year. And it's based on Robert Monroe's experiences, and it's a step-by-step guide into experiencing yourself being more than a physical body. It's not limited to classical out-of-body experiences, and I did not have that one great out-of-body experience when I visited the Institute in November of 2000. It was more a series of smaller events, partial projections or other paranormal events that I experienced. And that, or those events really convinced me that I was more than physical matter and that it was worthwhile doing some more research and getting into it a little deeper, which I did. In fact, after this 1 week at the Institute, I was so confused that I didn't feel I was able to return to my job as a TV producer again. Now, they tell you at the end of the six-day program that you shouldn't do or shouldn't make any changes in your life. Don't get divorced. Don't marry anyone. Don't buy a house. Don't sell a house. Don't quit your job. Don't get a new job. Because they know that these programs have a very deep effect on people. And people start questioning themselves and their existence. And so did I. And I waited 30 days as they had asked of all the participants. And on day 30, I told my business partner that I would leave. And I decided to take a break, take a sabbatical, and move to Australia for a year to pursue a yoga teacher training. Not because I was such an avid yogi, but I had practiced yoga in the 90s already, and I wanted to do something meaningful with this year and to come back to my senses, to integrate what I had experienced. And when I returned from Australia, it became really clear to me that I couldn't go back to working in television. My new sense of ethics and understanding of the greater reality system did not allow me to go back to do such trivial work. And I was a tabloid journalist, I have to say. You know, it wasn't real serious stuff that I was doing. It was gossip and Hollywood, you know, that sort of thing.
So I wanted to ask you about one of your first experiences there, where you're in this small I'm not sure how to describe it. Is it like a pod with a small mattress? That's where you spend the week. That's your bedroom as well as where you go through these experiences at the Munro Institute. Is that right?
That is right. They're called CHECK units, CHEC, and I believe it stands for Controlled Holistic Environmental Chamber. And it's a term that Munro made up when he was still alive. And it's a wooden structure inside of a bedroom, and each bedroom features two of these wooden structures. They're just about 2 meters in length and maybe a meter wide. And there's a mattress inside and a thick curtain in front of it. It's almost like crawling through a bigger hole in order to get into your bed. And it's completely enclosed. The idea behind it was to give the participants a sense of privacy, but also to have a quiet room to yourself to, you know, do these exercises. And these exercises are being played through a sound system. And Munro, in his days as a scientist and researcher, developed a audio technology, which he called HemiSync, which is short for hemispheric synchronization. And what HemiSync does, and that was a novelty at the time, you know, there's a lot of copycats nowadays out there, but Munro did his research in a time where everything was analog. And he managed to put together this apparatus, which would allow people to experience very specific altered states of consciousness. And this took years and years and years of research. Altogether, he did more than 40 years of research on it. And the audio technology produces binaural beats in your brain, which means that both hemispheres are being triggered, so to say, and then operate wholesome on the same frequency. In your day-to-day life, you know, when you function as a human being, you're left brain oriented, you're very analytical, functional, but we also have a right hemisphere, which is the intuitive, the artistic side of us. And for most people, you know, they don't experience that part of their greater self a lot because they're, you know, born into this busy world and they're being asked to function. And then you have a few artists, you know, very few in terms of numbers. But they have a greater access to their right brain hemisphere. So inside this wooden structure, which is called a CHECK unit, you get a set of headphones and you put them on, and there's a trainer that guides you into an exercise, which was pre-recorded in the Gateway program. It's all original recordings done by Robert Munro himself. He has a very soothing and yet firm voice and guides you through different states of consciousness until you hopefully, you know, detach from your physical self. Because we are very much conditioned to be inside our body. That's the perception we have. But it's not really what we are. You know, as I explained earlier, consciousness exists. It just is. And the body is just a temporary vehicle. So my first experience was, I believe, on the second day. There were 24 participants, which I hadn't really all met. You know, I was very overwhelmed by this whole scenario. And I was nervous, as you can imagine, because I didn't know what to expect. In the year 2000, I couldn't do any research. There was nothing to look up on the internet. I just fully trusted my inner senses by going to an institute. You know, I could have been brainwashed. You know, I didn't know. But I quickly learned and felt that it's a very safe place to be, and that the trainers were excellent in guiding the participants into these exercises. And there was no question that remained unanswered. inside this tech unit, you're by yourself. And you listen to these audio recordings, and the binaural beats, what they do is it takes about 5 to 6 minutes after they are being introduced to facilitate an altered state of consciousness. And these exercises last for about 40, 45 minutes or so. And then you're slowly being taken back into full waking consciousness. And my first experience was that I thought I was fully awake after an exercise, and I tried to reach for the light switch, which was unfortunately very high up on the wooden wall inside of the check unit. And I really had to stretch out my right arm in order to reach that light switch. And as I did that, and I felt the light switch for like just a split second, and then I felt my hand and my arm move all the way through this wooden wall. And within a matter of a second or 2 seconds, I was able to experience the inside of that wall with my hand, all the wires, the dust, the building materials, the wood. And that just shook me so hard that I literally jolted, and I opened my eyes only to realize that my arm was nowhere out there. It was under the blanket where I had put it before the exercise. And just that threw me off so hard that it took me probably a couple of days to even grasp what had happened. It's such a profound experience. And if you tell it to someone, it may not sound that great, but if you experience it yourself, it's a whole different story. And that was just the beginning. I quickly wanted to add, because I'm talking about this audio technology called, at the time it was called Hemisync. Today, the Monroe Institute is working with more than that. They call it Monroe Sound Science because they've added components to that technology. But originally, it was a very straightforward binaural beat technology. And the way binaural beats work is when you introduce a certain frequency, let's say 100 hertz frequency into your left ear, and a slightly different frequency into the right ear, let's say 104 hertz, you have a difference of about 4 hertz, or exactly 4 hertz in this case. And that the brain is realizing that there's something off, you know, and this is just a simplified version. There's a third silent tone that will build inside your brain. And if you have more than one, and that's a binaural beat, and if you have more than one frequency, Monroe developed recipes that were rather complex and complicated. So it's always more than one frequency in one ear and one frequency in the other ear. But when these silent tones start working together inside the brain, they produce a sort of silent symphony, and that will then trigger the brain to work as in a whole state. And you will have access to perceptions that you don't usually have in your waking consciousness.
Is this Hemisync available? Like, could you get what Monroe has developed?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it something you could use every day, perhaps when you're meditating, or is it quite powerful and you shouldn't do it as often?
Well, no, you can do it as often as you like. The challenge is, you know, to use it properly. And I teach a lot of workshops that involve the Monroe Sound Science or Hemisync, and people don't really know what to look for. You know, they buy a bunch of tapes or MP3s and download them from the internet, and then they go and meditate and they feel that stuff is happening, but it's best to have some guidance, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a full residential program at the Monroe Institute. They have worldwide trainers, so-called outreach trainers, much like myself, that teach several short weekend programs where you can get a taste and you learn, you know, how to properly use the technology. But it's widely available. You know, Hemisync has its own website, and the Monroe Institute is also selling audio recordings. It's just that a lot of people don't really know how to work with those recordings properly.
And as you're an outreach trainer, can people book sessions with you? Do you do it over Zoom?
Yes, we have online workshops, but I also do in-person workshops, mainly in Germany, because that's where my... I fly from Los Angeles to Germany about 4 or 5 times a year to do workshops because the demand is so high and we only have a couple of trainers here. But there's a brilliant trainer up in Great Britain, in England, you know, and Luigi, and he's conducting a bunch of programs every year, residential as well as online programs.
So when you talked earlier about how your arm went through the wall and it was a real shock and it took you time to process that, but you were at the Monroe Institute, so did you have to do and then another session in the afternoon or another session the next day?
You do 4 to 5 sessions a day.
Oh.
You know, so it's rather intense. And it really changes how your brain works, essentially. It's a brain entrainment method, and it has lasting effects. And if you keep using these audio recordings, you know, these effects will never go away. So your heightened perceptions or and the development of your inner senses or clear sentience will keep going on. And it's really helpful depending on what line of work you do. It's highly integratable and beneficial. It's almost magical. You know, after this week, as I said, I couldn't go back to my normal job because it was such profound... It was such a profound week and life-changing experience. And even at the Institute, you know, sometimes I wasn't able to put on the headphones again after I'd done 3 exercises in one day and stuff kept happening. I needed time to process and I would just walk outside. They have beautiful grounds and just integrate. One of the experiences I had, which are also worth mentioning, because people always think they imagine everything in that happens in their brain, which is not really true. But I had one instance which is really significant, and was significant for my further development as well in understanding that imagination and fantasy are just modalities of perception. Really, it's not our ego that produces these perceptions. It's information that is already there and just being perceived. I was in one of the exercises and we were instructed to visualize a so-called energy bar tool, which is nothing but a stick that, you know, lights up in the dark. But I didn't know how to do it. It sounds stupid maybe, but I don't have that gift of being able to visualize something on cue or on demand. So I was struggling with that. About halfway through the exercise, I was so frustrated that I felt that I wasn't even really in a deep meditation anymore because my brain had started to, you know, process and think, which you're not supposed to do during a meditation, when all of a sudden I perceive the image of a beautiful woman with long, curly brown hair, much like an angel type figure, except that she wasn't wearing like a white angelic gown, but just probably jeans and t-shirt. And she handed me her energy bar tool and said, "Hey, Oliver, here you go." And for just a split second, I held it in my non-physical hand and I was so shocked that I immediately woke up. And that's where the exercise ended for me. So we're instructed to write everything down, even the smallest perceptions that, you know, we have during an exercise. We're asked to take 5 or 10 minutes afterwards to write down everything. It's much like, you know, dreams. Once you wake up, you start to forget what happened just minutes ago. And then it becomes a just vague sort of memory at some point where, you know, that doesn't really make sense anymore. So, but if you start writing things down immediately, it helps to get a bigger picture, especially if you spend a few days doing this stuff, because you can go back through your notes and you know, put a puzzle together. But after that particular exercise, you know, we went to a room called the white carpet room at the Institute. It's the debriefing room. So before each exercise and after each exercise, there is a meeting that takes place. And the debriefing allows people to share what they've experienced or not experienced or the questions they have. And I was sitting in the very front because I came in late. And it was also, I think it was also the same day, the second or maybe the third day when this happened. And I listened to the other participants. And all of a sudden, I hear a female voice behind me. And she said, oh, you know, I had a really great time during this exercise. I was able to visualize this energy bar tool really quickly. And it did everything that, you know, we were asked to do with it. And then I just thought, oh, I'm done. I'm just going to walk around and see if anybody needs my help. And then I saw Anne. She was an 86-year-old participant at the time. And this lady said, I saw Anne, and she was just floating around, much like she was asleep. And then Anne confirmed that she was sleeping during the exercise and she didn't remember anything. And then the lady said, oh, and then I saw Oliver, and he was struggling with his energy bar tool. I felt that he couldn't get it together, so I just handed him mine. And as you can imagine, when I heard that, I just, you know, began to jump up and down, and I had the exact scenario written down in my notebook, you know, and I just couldn't comprehend what had happened, because in my mind, it had just been a visualization, nothing else. But obviously this lady had an out of body experience, and she had floated into my check unit and had handed me this non-physical thing called an energy bar tool, and I perceived it somehow. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that will happen.
And was there a time your roommate, is it Phil? He said he went out of his body and he saw a shoe on the roof.
Yes. That was quite fascinating. So not everybody has an easy time with this. You know, if you're a very analytical person, if you question a lot of things, if you're a skeptic, and I used to be a journalist, you know, so I would question everything thoroughly, even though I was just a tabloid journalist, but it was just in my nature. Phil, on the other side, my roommate, he was just a guy, you know, going with the flow, just not, you know, doubting everything so much. And he would just put on his headphones, and it was one of the first exercises, and just have a full-blown out-of-body experience. The way he described it at the time was that he would just float outside the check unit, and he was able to perceive the room that we shared. And then he went through the ceiling and through the roof to a platform up. There's a small platform up on the Monroe Institute, which we didn't know about at that point. And from that platform, he saw a sneaker, but just a single sneaker lying on the roof of the Institute. And when his experience ended, he, you know, reunited with his conscious mind, got back into his body, so to speak, and then he wrote it down. And he told me about it right after the exercise, and I became very envious, but I wanted to know whether it was true. So we tried to find our way through a sort of hidden staircase that led up to the roof, to this little platform, and sure enough, there was a sneaker up on the roof. Someone must have thrown it there. It looked kind of old and rotten, so it's probably been there for a while, but it was proof enough for me, you know, that he indeed had this experience. That was quite fascinating. That motivated me to keep working on it.
Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? In my new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, I share 30 incredible stories of people who were clinically dead, some with no heartbeat, no brain activity, yet returned with knowledge that was later verified. These accounts challenge everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. It's available now as an ebook, paperback, and audiobook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other good bookshops. Again, it's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, and I hope you check it out. So part of the title of your book is Explorations into the Afterlife. So what was the first thing you experienced that you would say might have been an exploration into the afterlife?
So after the Gateway program, you know, they have different programs that you can take depending on what your interests are. There's programs that go, that work with your inner guidance, or programs that about manifestation and the law of attraction, programs about healing stuff. But also there's one branch that especially Monroe was interested in after his wife had become ill. She was diagnosed with a cancer at the time. So he went out to explore what we call the afterlife. And he put a program together, which is called Lifeline. And then another one that follows that, Exploration 27. The number 27 stands for one of the states of consciousness that were defined by him. And he had defined a whole array of levels of consciousness. And he always used the term focus level. Don't ask me why. He never really explained it, because I think because, you know, it's a certain focus that you're that you build up in order to be able to perceive in these states of consciousness. So for example, the first state of consciousness that you initiate a classical out-of-body experience from is called Focus 10, F10. And it's mind awake, body asleep. And it defines it very well, because it's that point where you go from waking consciousness into sleep mode. And we all experience that twice a day at least, when we go to bed and when we wake up. But it only lasts for like a split second, really. And we're never able to really, you know, hit that sweet spot and stay awake. You know, how often have you tried to be conscious about when you actually fall asleep? You know, it doesn't happen. One second you're here, and then the next second you're gone. And this focus 10 state allows you to balance that very narrow bridge between wakefulness and sleep. Then you have focus 12, which is the state of expanded awareness, which feels completely different from this, from focus 10. Then there's focus 15, the state of no time, and so on and so on. Eventually you hit a point where you get into the realms of the afterlife, and that starts at about focus level 21, really. And it goes up to 27. 27 is what Monroe calls the park. The park is where you go ideally after your physical death. You know, you have a bunch of spirit guides, if you want to call them that, that will take you there if everything goes well. And I'm saying that very consciously, because we have a lot of people on our planet that deal with certain psychological issues, or you know, drug issues, alcoholism, and stuff like that. They might not be able to jump from here into the park straight away. They might, you know, linger in one of the in-between states until they wake up. But I had a really hard time, you know, initiating these classical out-of-body experiences, which was always a drama for me, because other people would be able to just float, you know, outside of their bodies and have all these great explorative journeys that they would do and report on. And for me, it was a struggle, especially during the Gateway program, and then I did the Guidelines program. But when I came to the Lifeline program, which was designed by Monroe and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she was a very well-known near-death experienced researcher, and she had been at the Institute and also experienced the out-of-body state, and had this idea that Monroe should put together a program that allows people to experience the process of dying, really, but also to help those soul fragments that have not passed on to the park straight away, to help them out, to facilitate their return to the mothership, so to say. And I found immediately when they played these frequencies that I was very easily able to get very clear perceptions. But it was a different type of experience. It wasn't like a classical out-of-body experience where you really have the sense of separation, which is an illusion anyway, as I explained, but that's what, you know, what I wanted, what my ego wanted, and what most people's ego wants. But what really happens, and Monroe developed a term for that, is you're phasing from one state of consciousness into another state of consciousness. Or as the physicist Thomas Campbell would put it, you're detaching from the data stream of one reality system and you're attaching to the data stream of a different reality system. And that can or may not come with the experience of being truly outside of your body. You know, it's very individual. So as I mentioned, I found that my access to those realms of the afterlife were so much easier than the out-of-body experience that, you know, we talk about when we float about our own room or the landscape on Earth. And I found that quite fascinating because I was able to bring back verifiable information. And that just blew my mind. And my first soul retrieval was in the year, I believe it was 2004. And that's one of the things you do. You retrieve those soul aspects that have, I don't want to say they have gotten lost, although some of them have gotten lost. You help guiding them to the park. And the way it works is, you set a clear intention and ask your guides to take you to a place where you can be of assistance that is suitable for you and for the person that needs assistance. Or sometimes it's a group, sometimes it's a group of people. And I was being led to the apartment of a woman, and it appeared to me not in color, but in sepia tones, which I found very odd. And I perceived a lady, an old lady, standing at her kitchen counter at the stove and preparing some kind of a soup or stew. And as she was, you know, working on her stew, I felt that she had passed on quite a while ago and wasn't aware of it. So I followed the instructions that I had been given beforehand, and I tried to raise her awareness by really being a clown. You know, you have to become very creative in those moments because they cannot easily perceive you because they're so focused on, in this case, the task of preparing a stew. And obviously there was stuff going on in her energy field that she had shut herself off from the outside environment, so to say. But eventually I was able to get through to her, and she was very surprised to find someone in her apartment. And she asked me, how are you? How did you get in? And I just answered, I just came in because it smelled so lovely. I wanted to know what you're cooking. And then she talked to me a little bit telepathically and said she was waiting for her husband. And I got the sense that her husband had also passed on, but she was waiting for him to come home from work. So what most likely happened was that she was indeed preparing a meal, and she might have had a massive heart attack or something and just dropped dead and not realized that she was dead. And out of her sense of duty, she kept waiting for her husband and preparing a meal for him, as she had probably done hundreds of times. And that's where she got stuck. And what happened then was I was asked to retrieve information. You know, sometimes you get to a point where this information can be verifiable. So she told me the year that she was perceiving, her full name, first and last name, as well as the town that she was living in. And if I remember, it was the year 1976 that she had given me. Now, at the time, the internet wasn't as broad and as fast as today, and you couldn't get that kind of data just from the internet. So I actually traveled to Germany, to that town, and asked the record keepers at the town hall if they could look up this person for me. And sure enough, the name was right, and she had passed on in 1976. And that was an experience that changed everything for me. Because all these questions that I was asking myself over the years, is this not imagination? Am I just making up this stuff? Am I losing my mind? That very moment when that clerk told me that this lady had actually lived and passed on in that exact year, it just was proof for me that I wasn't just making stuff up. And then for a number of years, I would very actively pursue those soul fragment retrievals. And I had a lot of verifiable experiences, mind-blowing experiences that I shared one other experience in my book, and I changed the names and the place because I have to be really mindful. There's still relatives alive, that went through trauma, and you want to make sure that they don't, get that information by just reading a random book.
I wanted to ask you about that woman's perception of time, because if she died decades earlier, she would have felt like she had been there decades according to normal life. But did it seem like she thought her husband was just an hour or two late?
Yes. She was clearly asking herself, why is he not coming home? But she was not in a state where she knew that she had waited 25 years, There is no linear time in those dreams. There's no sense of time. Time and space, as we know it, are very physical, aspects. And the law, they're part of our physics. They're dictating the way we live here in our physical environment. But as soon as we leave that environment, time ceases to exist in the way that we know it. I'm sure there's a different sort of time. I haven't figured it out because it seems to be different in every reality system. But in that particular realm, which is called Focus 23, where you deal with soul aspects that haven't gone on to the park for numerous reasons, they're not aware that time has passed. They can be there for centuries and not know. And they don't suffer. It's not an environment where there's other environments where soul fragments suffer, but in Focus 23, there's no real suffering. There's a lot of confusion or a strong intent or a strong will. Some people that pass on still have unfinished business and they're trying to get through, trying to pass on a message, trying to appear in our dreams or move things or manipulate our electricity system, which they can sometimes because they still have things to say or want to participate. Some don't realize that they're dead. Others died so quickly that there's no awareness. For a while in the late 2000s, I was involved with a group of people that was interested in exploring suicide bombers and their consciousness and what happens to them and the people that they take with them. And that's also one of the phenomena. I stumbled upon a group of people that were in a market setting, an outside market in some country. I couldn't get the information, but it was like they were shopping for groceries and fruit and vegetables. And all of a sudden, they're in the afterlife. None of these people knew what had happened because the explosion happened so quickly and the process of passing, there was no pain or anything involved. It was just, I'm here and the very next second I'm there. So they were still, sorting through their fruit and veggies. Some of them were wondering because there were less and less people as more and more realized that they had passed on because their guides were getting involved and trying to wake them up, so to say. But yeah, it's fascinating.
And I wanted to ask you about a place you went to. Is it the Healing and Regeneration Center, where they said they treat new arrivals who were very ill or died in accidents?
It's a very complex, energetic phenomenon, I want to call it. We just gave it the label, the Healing and Recreation Center, for lack of a better explanation. Everything that you perceive in an out-of-body state, which is part of a different reality system, is really not something you can use physical words for to explain it properly. We don't have the vocabulary oftentimes. You know, one example is there's colors out there that I've never seen here. So I wouldn't be able to describe them. There's no words for these colors. Same goes for music. There is sounds that you've never heard in the physical realm ever. And there you experience that kind of stuff. And then you try to explain it to people, and half the experience gets lost in translation because of a lack of, you know, vocabulary. And the same goes for the Healing and Recreational Center. My understanding is that a lot of soul aspects that are going home are being treated there because they died with that expectation or with the awareness that they are ill. You know, for example, someone who had a slow passing due to a, you know, years-long cancer diagnosis, maybe, had built up a certain expectation in their mind. I'm sick, I'm suffering, and there is a, you know, there's always that hope of getting better. And once they pass, they will be treated until they realize it's no longer necessary. It's more of a situation where they receive energetic treatments to wake up, you know, to balance and to perceive comfort. At the same time, I understand that there is research departments that are also part of this healing complex, where they do very advanced research before they inspire great minds in the physical realm that are then called inventors because they help to manifest it here. So all the technological developments that we experience here have their root somewhere in a different reality system. And some random person gets inspired, or it may be part of their soul's journey or soul's plan, that they get inspired at some point and then they develop something new, some kind of technology. And I've spent quite a bit of time in that healing and recreational environment, and I've spoken telepathically to a lot of people that work as doctors there, as well as to the patients. And one thing I don't understand really is that when I travel there, when I set the intention, the building itself is different every time. Sometimes it appears as a hospital, sometimes it's more like a wooden hut. Sometimes it's I don't know, it can be the oddest thing from the outside. And I always get confused until I remember within that experience, oh, it's always different. So I try to find an entryway, knowing that my intention had brought me there. And once I step into the inside, it's always the same. And then I know my way around. And very interesting.
Also, you say in the book that your path to establishing communication with your spirit guides was rather tumultuous. So what happened with that?
I don't know. I think it's my strong mind, my doubting mind that got in the way for many years. I couldn't let go of this inner skeptic. You know, although I do think it's very healthy to have a skeptic, but a doubter is not helpful. Someone that really nags all the time and tells you, oh, you're just making this stuff up. And that's what was happening to me. Maybe it's my German upbringing that keeps me questioning everything, you know, over and over until I'm finally able to accept the things as they are. But on my search for spirit guides, I was highly disappointed for a number of years because I experienced that other participants in the courses that I took you know, would meet with their spirit guides, have these great conversations, and you know, knew exactly how to work with them. And it just didn't happen for me. There was a point even where I thought, I don't have spirit guides. Now I know, you know, that there was also value in that path that I walked. I wouldn't be able to teach these things if it had come easy to me. And that was probably part of the game, I would assume. But it took me a good 10 years or so to really find that connection. But once this connection is found, it's a gift. It's a true gift. Because you know, no matter what happens to you in life, you're not alone. You're never alone. And they've become my greatest resource by now. You know, I won't make any bigger decisions without consulting with, yeah, I call them my spirit team, because they've never showed themselves to me in person. And if when they do, it happens very randomly, but then they tell me exactly why they choose to appear this way. There's usually a clear message behind that, but they're telling me they're energetic beings. They don't have a body and they don't have names. So I just call them my team. They can make up a name, you know, and throw it to you if you're willing to accept it. A lot of people are. I wasn't. That was my problem. And looking back, if they had shown themselves to me like, you know, as an old guy with a white beard and a name such as Noah, maybe, my doubter would have never allowed me to accept that. My mind was too strong. So it was a rather rocky road to the realization that I was dealing with a bunch of helpers that decided to remain invisible and without names. So the connection that I have is purely through feeling, and they will implement thoughts. You know, they will send me thoughts. There is a sense of knowing when they come through, and it happens on a daily basis. It's not that they, you know, guide every step in my life. Absolutely not. But I know I can count on them if I need to make a decision for the greater good of all. Let's call it that. You know, they will always give their input or, you know, show me the choices I have. They'll never support any ego-based endeavors. It's not their job. You know, they're there to make you aware and help you realize your soul's plan on why are you here? What is your mission in life? You know, and I think with their help, I found it eventually. And ever since, I've been a very content and balanced guy, which I never was before.
The book is called Invisible Out-of-Body Experiences and Explorations into the Afterlife, The Munro Method. And people can get that on Amazon, can they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if somebody wanted to book a workshop with you, how would they find you?
They would find me solely in Germany at this point. As I said earlier, you know, it's sort of become my territory. I used to teach workshops in Canada and in the United States, but I've now narrowed it down to the German-speaking market. But as I said, you know, if any German speakers listen, you can go to my website, olivertappy.com. It's just my name without any dots or minuses, .com. But as I said, we have trainers in the United States. Please feel free to look them up on the website of the monroeinstitute.org. You know, there is a worldwide list, and you'll find a trainer near your home, I'm sure.
And lastly, I just wanted to ask, if somebody does a workshop and it's their first time, what can they expect? What do you think that they are capable of achieving?
It's not about achievements. You know, I make that very clear. The greatest success is if you leave your expectations behind and you're opening up to whatever it is that needs to be experienced at this point in your life. And for a lot of people, it's not necessarily what their ego has envisioned or what their ego wants, but there might be certain things they need to experience before that classical out-of-body experience. And I made the mistake of having a very clear not only intent, but also a very clear expectation when I went to the Monroe Institute. I wanted to experience exactly what Monroe had experienced. Honestly, had I had these experiences at the time, I would have probably ended up in a loony bin. Because if your perception opens up from one minute to the next and you're confronted with other reality systems in that kind of way, that's like in Kundalini awakening, it's very overwhelming. I've seen it happening, and it's not healthy, I want to say. You know, even though our ego wants that type of experience, it's not necessarily the best intent to carry that intent to manifest it. Be open to what your soul's need is. And a lot of time it will be an out-of-body experience. But not sometimes there's other things that need to happen beforehand. Maybe a connection to your guides or some healing that needs to take place of certain aspects of yourself before you can open up to the full-blown OBE.
Well, it's been great having you on the podcast. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Well, thank you so much, Simon, for letting me share my story. I think it's an important one. And we all need to get to that point that we're not just physical beings. We're multidimensional beings living a multidimensional life. And our world would be a different one if each person had an out-of-body experience and knew that.
Great. Thanks again. This week, I was talking to Oliver Tapp about his book, Invisible, Out-of-Body Experiences and Explorations into the Afterlife, The Monroe Method. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get exclusive access to an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get access to an extended episode every month, and you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.